is a rezoning at 165 Montrose Street under file DAZ 205 of 2014. In accordance with the City of Winnipeg Charter and the Development Procedures Bylaw, this is a combined hearing, and the following items will also be heard at the same time. Item 10 is a conditional use at 165 Montrose Street under file DCU 107572 of 2014. D, item 11 is a variance at 165 Montrose Street under file DAV 107573 of 2014. D. So I believe this is the applicant.
Okay, John Dizzle and
John Dizzle. John?
It's John Dizzle.
What are they setting up? Something that's going to take a minute?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh. Harvey, I'll be back in 1 minute. They're setting up a computer thing anyway.
This is the last one.
Good evening, everyone. Okay, so we have a short presentation here just to kind of cover off the broad strokes of this proposal. It's a corner lot, a corner of Academy and Montrose. And it's essentially, it's a double lot. It's 70 feet wide. And I'll show you the... remote works. There we go. So there's the original survey. It shows the original plan there for the subdivision. Got total area of about 8,500 feet, 70 feet wide. Currently we have a 1,400 foot bungalow on the property. Oh, and there's the house there in the picture. And there's just a kind of a rakish shot showing some of the other houses. So the concept is to create a multifamily, increase the density slightly on that property, although it's an underutilization of an R2 zoning. Like with conditional use, I think we can go land area by 800, but we're only going to do 4 units on there. And it fits, our design is going to fit with the streetscape. Generally, we wanted to do two separate buildings. And each building is going to be 2 1,300 square foot residential units, fairly modest in size, and you can see that later on our scaling. Height is going to be consistent with the adjacent homes. We're not going to be going higher. And we're going to talk, we can talk about that a bit more later. Parking, each unit, we're going to have parking for one vehicle in an enclosed garage. But with the width of our properties there, I think that we have the ability to add a couple of parking pads in the back there. So we're going to have enclosed parking, and then if the need arises and if it's something that gets brought up in discussion today, I think it's something that we can probably concede to do with the amount of width that we have there in the back, so we can add a bit more parking. Because I know one of the some of the feedback we got when we were walking around in the neighborhood was that we were going to get increased vehicular traffic or vehicular just or parking on the street in front. So we might be able to mitigate against that if the owners have more than one vehicle. So each unit, again, consistent with the neighborhood, we're going to have a backyard, albeit it's going to be small. It's going to be a courtyard, not an expansive yard, certainly not like what is there right now. There's a lot of area. But nonetheless, it's going to be a detached garage. So in terms of its modeling and the way it's going to look in the area, it's going to be consistent. It's not going to be an attached garage. There's going to be space for human interaction in the back of the in the back of these properties. Front yard alignment is going to be the same as adjacent properties, which is 30 feet. And this point's going to be brought up again later. Presently, just of note, our house on Montrose is 22'8". Is that right? 22'8" off of the front front property line. We're actually going to move it another 8 feet back, so we get the 30 feet. So it's actually going to be even further set back than it is right now. We sought to seek a design architecturally that was compatible with the area. It has some modern elements to it, and you'll be able to see that in one of the side profiles or side elevations of the project. But we have a peak roof. Finishes are going to be brick, stucco, and there's probably going to be a combination of some hardy siding or hardy paneling or something to that effect. So the rear yard setbacks are consistent with the pattern. Again, just drawing attention to our efforts to try and make this design work with the neighborhood. We didn't want to push the envelope on variances for the side yards, variances for the backyards. We wanted it to look like two smaller buildings that would normally look in that area. So these are just the following bulleted points just kind of speak to those efforts. So again, the front yard setback 30 feet, consistent with neighboring properties. I keep bringing that up because I know that there's a house in Montrose that is looming, and I think people are worried about the possibility that that is going to be repeated here. Side yard setback on the south, it's consistent with zoning guidelines for a single family. You know, granted, we are using the maximum there, but there's nothing stopping from anybody building a single-family residence and coming up 4 feet on that property line. We're just going to be putting our place there. And I know one of the issues of concern is that proximity to that property line is going to result in some of those trees. Currently, we have some big trees in that property, and I can speak about that a little bit more later, but clearly, we're going to lose some. Like, that's just the way it's going to be if we do that, if we do this development. The other thing that needs to be mentioned, I think, is the grading in that section of the property. It's very low as compared to the neighbor to the south, as well as our house on the north. And regardless of what goes on that property, if it's these buildings that we're proposing or something else, the grade will have to be brought up in that lower section. And I think to the extent that it's probably going to kill those trees anyway, we're going to have to add a couple of feet because it's kind of a swamp right now. There's a lot of low area. Main building facade is oriented towards Montrose, which is in accordance with what the city generally is encouraging in that area, allowing for informal surveillance and human activity on the street. So this is the language that we've taken from the report that was generated as a result of our meetings with Michael Robinson on the subject. Building height is consistent with neighbors. It's even lower than what we could be going. I think we can go 35 feet to midline of the roof, and we're going 28 feet. So the profile is really going to be, the massing rather, is going to be modest, and it's going to, you know, it's not going to stand out as a as a looming, overbearing property. I think with time, when our landscaping grows in, it's going to just fit right into that neighborhood. And again, the square footage of each structure is consistent with what we have in the side there around the neighborhood. And again, just another mention of the choice of materials for doing this property or for doing the project: brick, stucco. Stucco we see all over the place. Stucco, I don't think John or I are a huge fan of stucco, but it's, you know, I think when you see it from the street, you're not going to see stucco. You're going to see brick, and you're going to see windows, and you're going to see wood and the stairs and that sort of thing. The stuccos are going to be mostly on the side of the building. So here we go. Here's a site plan, and this is basically the part of the package that we took out in the neighborhood when we were canvassing around the neighborhood. You can see that we've got the detached garage. There are some small portions of some flat roof, but it's mostly a peak roof, and some communication between the buildings. And we like the two building design because it allows we thought, better identity for each of the owners of that space. You know, you're not just in one big block, but you know, it kind of creates some separation and some uniqueness in the neighborhood, and allows light to come into those spaces. So they're going to be nice spaces. It's not going to be just volume for the sake of volume. We're really trying to achieve a healthy living environment and a good, pleasable space for people. Here's a street from Montrose as per our rendering. You can see, like, we tried to do an accurate representation of what the house to the south was, and you can see relative to that, you know, on an individual basis, at least, we're coming in slightly smaller than that. You know, you don't want it to be too small because that's going to stand out in the opposite. But stair material, I know someone brought this up, one of our supporters, he called me yesterday, and he said, well, you know, he liked the project, but he wasn't sure about the stairs. And I said, well, you know, it was mostly, I think the guy who's doing our rendering just took some direction with that, and we're probably going to do something like wood. And, you know, we're open to talk about how those could be finished. Kind of a rakish shot from corner of Academy and Montrose. And the next few slides are floor plans, and I don't want to waste a bunch of time on that. I think people might find that interesting for a quick overview of what we're planning. That's a roof shot. This is our basement level. So we're designing it as a split level. So you're going to walk in on the main floor, and you're going to have an option to go down a few stairs into that basement, which is going to be unfinished but fully developable. So it's a space that could become a bedroom. We'll probably rough in for a bathroom down there and provide infrastructure. I think we've got a powder room drawn in there at the moment. So 1,300 square feet does not include any of that. So when you add that in, we're closer to, I would say closer to 1,900 feet on total. This is the main floor plan, fairly open concept, more in tune with how people are using using condos and using their houses these days. It's eat-in kitchens, and space is kind of seamless with the living area. Powder room and laundry on the main floor as well. Second floor, we have two bedrooms. The space at the front, on the left side of the plan, could be converted into another bedroom. So you could, with minimal efforts, move some of the walls around and make this a three-bed. I know that's not really germane to the presentation here today, but anyway, that's it. And well, there you can go. You can see there's another shot. That's the one we have from the front at the beginning of the presentation. This is the shot from the back, right? Shot from the back of the property. Here's a side profile. I don't know if anyone's seen this before. So coming into this, we spent quite a bit of time talking with the city, and I know there's from other projects I've been involved with in the Academy area, I know there's a PDO in place and some very specific design direction that the city wants to see adhered to. So we were careful not to waste our time and run down a path that would have been, you know, kiboshed at the front end. So we spent quite a bit of time talking with Mike Robinson about this, and you know, together we came up with this plan that instead of doing a, we wanted to put four units onto the space, right? So instead of doing one large unit, again, four units, the massing just didn't seem to fit with that neighborhood. So we split this up. And it's at a cost to us. It's way more efficient and economical to do one building envelope for those four units. But instead, we split it up, and we came up with the plan that you just saw in two different places. So again, it's consistent with what we believe the city's direction is with respect to corridors and corner properties. You know, we're certainly seeing some of that by way of precedent along some of our major corridors, like Stafford, for example. There have been and there are some projects going forward in that street and Academy as well, actually. I know that some were passed just recently, and it makes, from our perspective, we're fans of infill housing as opposed to sprawling suburbs. We feel that this represents a healthy model for cities. It's not over-densifying the neighborhood, we don't think. We think that it's a modest representation of what we could be doing there. And it makes sense. You know, we understand that if this was further inside the block, if it was up the street, I don't even think we would have made an attempt to pursue this. But we feel that this is a good fit for the area. And we certainly have made efforts to connect with the neighbors on that. Again, there's a couple duplexes in the area which reflect a precedent in terms of multifamily. I don't want to dwell on that too much. I mean, a lot of those were grandfathered in and have been there for a long time, and I don't think that that's going to be germane to our argument here today. But again, just drawing attention to what we see going on in other parts of the city very close by, you know, like with Walter Corp. He's got quite a few projects that have gone on. You know, some people are supportive of those. Some people don't have anything or don't want nothing to do with them. But nonetheless, I think that they're good attempts and often are good models for increased density in some of our terrific older neighborhoods, of which I live in, by the way. These are going to be upscale units. They're going to cost quite a bit of money. I think that, you know, it's going to do good things for the property values in the area overall. We felt that we had strong neighborhood support. I went out about four or five times. We handed out packages. Some people I just never had an opportunity to speak with. I have with me today some letters of support from neighbors. Most notably, I had good verbal support from the neighbors immediately surrounding that property, with the exception of the property to the south. I never had an opportunity to speak with that person. The person behind us loved the idea. He wanted to invest $50,000 into the project. I said it wasn't really an option. But and the family right across the street from us also was in support of it, and amongst an array of others that up and down the street. I know that there are some people here tonight that are against it, but we did receive, I felt, was a good level of support for this project. And that's it. John, do you have anything you want
to? It's one question that I have right off the hop is why did we, that was my other question. Why did you decide to do two principal dwellings on one large property than going through a subdivision?
Well, we discussed the possibility. You mean subdividing it and then doing two buildings?
Right. Instead of doing a 75-foot lot, try to see if the neighborhood would be okay with two 35-foot lots.
Well, that is ostensibly what we have here, is two 35-foot lots.
Again, then the neighborhood would have spoke up what they feel about having 35-foot lots. But right now we're not doing that. We're talking about a 70-foot lot with two principal dwellings.
Right, and actually that discussion did take place. Like, we did talk with PP&D about that. You know, should we do the subdivision? What's the proper course of action here? Do we subdivide and then build? The decision at the time, and I'm trying to recall some of the finer points of that decision or discussion, rather, but I think that it made sense to submit this application without subdividing because it was going under one condo corp.
Oh, it's going to be condo. Yeah. Okay, that's one idea. I looked at it because I don't, based upon our bylaws, you wouldn't get through because two 35-foot lots would take the circumference around. There's not any 35-foot lots around that area. So you'd have a hard time getting administration approval for a subdivision because you don't meet the criteria in that area because no lots are that 35-foot in the 200-meter radius from that property.
Right, so there's a special protocol in place
right
so for dealing with that.
I think
aspect
that's the reason why you didn't come for a subdivision. I don't think the city... But again, that would be my opinion. I don't know. Was that brought up that you'd have a hard time?
It was. You know, there's actually a lot of support from the city with respect to doing a short-form subdivision on that.
Okay.
That wasn't our feedback at all. We never, ever got the sense that the city wasn't in support of subdividing that property and that we are trying to take a back door into getting this.
Again, we don't know. It's just not being. That's why I just try to figure out why. Okay. That's one question. I have some administration questions. What is between the two buildings, how much, what is your separation?
About 7 feet. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Maybe speaking to the mic. There's a mic. Or you can speak here.
It's 7 feet between the structures, and then what we're going to do is we're going to move the window walls back an extra foot, which allows 8 feet, which then allows the, by building code, the fenestration for increasing the size of the windows on the
front. And in between those two units, though, it's not going to, will it be a concrete walkway?
Be hardscaped.
Yeah. Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong, in the back where the garages are, it's all hardscaped as well. There isn't a lot of grass in that backyard that I saw. It's more of a deck.
No, I think that the best use of that space would be to hardscape it, like make a patio, like put patio stone down or that perforated patio stone where the grass could come through.
It just
either way.
Green. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. That's better for me. At this point, I'm good.
Is there anyone else in
anyone in support? No.
Opposition will be up. You'll be able to answer them.
Back.
You'll be able to come back.
Pardon me, sorry.
There'll be opposition now.
I understand.
And you can answer them after they're finished.
Oh, I have to sit down.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. Okay, so nobody else in support whose name has not been called? Nope.
I've already said that.
Okay. What do we have here? Alicia and Gary Rasmussen. Just here, okay.
You don't have to speak.
Okay. No, no,
Richard Birchall?
Yes.
Just want to register?
I'm just going to get some water. I'm not leaving the room. Okay?
Sorry?
You're the last one. Last man up. All right. He'll be speaking last, Harvey.
Forward? He wants to speak last. Do you guys wish to allow that? Oh.
Okay. Glenn and Patricia Nitschke.
Keep that there. Okay. I wasn't sure if you wanted it at the bottom. Please.
Yeah.
So I'm basically just going to read from a script here so I get all my points down. Good evening. My name is Glenn Nitschke, and I live at 171 Montrose, which is directly south of 165 Montrose. When my young family at the time and I were looking for a house to put down roots, River Heights was our only choice. The classic charm of the century-old homes, the mature and magnificent trees, the variety of schools and rec centers, and the great people who live in River Heights for generations. Now, having lived in River Heights for 15 years, when I'm asked, where do you live? I can proudly say we live in River Heights. When Phil Spivak, the previous owner of 165 Montrose, told me that he was moving out of the house, I had mixed emotions. First, surprise, concern, and hope. I was surprised because just the summer before, when I talked to him, he said he would never move from his house of 30-some years. Later, I understood that Monopoly Realty, and not Phil, initiated the sale of the property. I was concerned because I didn't know who was going to move in or their motivation. But I was hopeful because the house was far from perfect, as we can see, and hoped that the new owners would give it a complete makeover. One important comment that I'd like to emphasize is that the house should be rebuilt. The community is not arguing this point. It is the type and the design that concerns us. The one time that I met the developer from Monopoly and Engstrom Projects was when I walked over to him in the yard at 165 Montrose late last summer. In our discussions, he asked me what he'd think if he split the property into two lots. I told him I wasn't in favor of it. But soon after, my neighbor said that half of the lot, the yard section, was for sale on Kijiji. Later, the real estate signs went up. Nothing happened from this, and I was thankful that nobody wanted to buy half a lot in River Heights. Time passed, and about a month ago, in my mailbox was a proposal from a new development company known as D Squared Projects. As we know, it proposes to build two-unit condos on the property. So instead of one family, or even two, the result would be four units. And it's interesting that the city planner's report states that the subject site is an appropriate location for a development with a moderately higher density than the community norm. I respectfully say that going from a density of one to four is not moderately higher and is not the norm in our community. When I read D Squared's proposal, I was concerned by its lack of understanding in the community or the city's direction for it. Our city's direction, or our Winnipeg's Direction 6 for mature neighborhoods, clearly states, plan for the sustainable development of healthy neighborhoods based on their particular historic identity and character. This is a direct inference to River Heights. However, D Squared's proposal states that, and I quote, the proposed architecture of the units reflects portions of the existing style of houses found on the street and reconfigures these into a minimalistic, modern approach. If you ask anyone in Winnipeg what the identity of River Heights is, they'd say anything but minimalistic modern, maybe more like old world charm. And it's interesting that the word home is not used in the entire proposal, but refers to them as units and states that the existing yard where Phil's grandchildren played in as a vacant parcel to the south. Many people I've talked to, when they initially saw the schematics of the buildings, thought they were for commercial properties, that they could support, say, a travel agency or some other small business. Large windows, big bold angles, metal roof, a very modern architecture, appropriate for some areas, but not for our community. I also respectfully disagree with the city planner's summary statement in his report, which states, it is a subtle transition in building typology, which is sensitive to the existing character of the neighborhood. Given the perceived intentions of the proposal, we have concerns regarding the final look of the condos, as there are no guidelines or regulations. And given the minimalistic and modern design intent, I can think of one house on our street, Montrose, that is similar, and no one wants another mistake like that house in our community. Someone could argue that putting four units will attract more people to River Heights and infill. These new people would make use of the schools, rec centers, and everything we have to offer. It's an interesting point. However, let's look at who would move into these units. First, they're two bedrooms, not for families with more than one child, so maybe a retired couple who may want to stay in the area and downsize, or young professionals, or even a couple with a young child. Okay, let's look at the retired couple. In talks with the city planner, he told me that older people in River Heights may want to downsize and stay in the neighborhood. Condos are an option. He immediately referenced the quick sale in hours of the condos on Centennial. Well, the condos on Centennial are built for older couples, i.e. they're on a single floor. Why would an elderly couple move to a proposed condo that has elevated basement and two stories with multiple levels and stairs? retired couples moved out of their homes because of the stairs. Now, let's look at the young couple. The massing of the properties is so all-encompassing that not only will the majority of the majestic trees be removed, but there's really no yard. The current architecture drawings show a 12-foot deep yard. However, I also heard from the city planner that the drawings have changed, and now the units are pushed back 7 feet. So I assume, as I haven't seen the new drawings, that this will push the yard back to under 5 feet. Does a new family with children really want to share a 350-square-feet concrete yard with three other units? The proposal from D Squared states each unit will have a backyard typical of the neighborhood. Well, this isn't true. By the way, the certified diagrams in the city planner's conditional use report says that there's a 22-foot 4-inch frontage, but in the guideline number 2 of the rezoning report, it states that the proposed front setback is 30 feet. It's a little bit confusing as to figure which was the right answer. Regardless, as per Winnipeg Zoning Bylaw 20-2006, Part 5, Section 139, it states, in the case of a corner lot, the setback of the two nearest properties on the same block or for all the properties facing the same street on the same block may be used for calculating the allowed setback. Well, the two closest houses, Margaret Tobin's, who's at 177 Montrose, and mine, are just over 40 feet, at least 10 more feet in the proposal, depending on which number you take. So the units are not right for the retired couples or in small families for various reasons. So this leaves the young professionals. Sure, they might live in the condo, but would they use the schools or rec centers? It's highly doubtful. Why would they? So instead of building a home for a family that could use these facilities, we are swapping out a viable residence for them by building a condo complex and pushing the family to the outskirts of the city where there are limited schools and rec centers. So now the city will have to spend more tax dollars in building more schools and rec centers. So let's discuss what the condo complex could take away from Winnipeg. Revenue. Over the last couple weeks, everybody in River Heights had the privilege to host a movie production that was shooting scenes just a couple hundred yards from the lot in question. River Heights has had many movie companies take advantage of our neighborhood's historic appeal. I'd hate to see the movie companies take all the revenue and jobs related to this out of our Winnipeg and go to Edmonton or Regina or Quebec City just because we agreed to put 4-unit condos with minimalistic modern approaches in their preferred locations. The city planner indicated to me that there was a push to do multi-family dwellings on corner lots. I noticed about 2 or 3 weeks ago that the corner lot in Waverly, beside where the production company was shooting, is also up for sale. I'm wondering if any developer is thinking about the precedent that this hearing is setting and calculating his next step on that property. The production company's movie sites would no longer be applicable. Lost revenue for Winnipeg and lost jobs for our local movie industry. I do understand that D Squared is a business and they're not here for the community at large or the city in general, but to make money. There's nothing wrong with that. However, it can't be at the expense of River Heights, City Central, or our Winnipeg. There's a quote from Yahoo Finance Canada. The problem with condos is they have a shorter lifespan than homes. Their value tends to peak within the first 10 years. Condos are commodities, and people want the newest thing. As a condo building ages, the unit becomes less attractive and underperforms. With that statement, I hope our children aren't back in 10 years with the question, what are we going to do with these outdated condos now? In conclusion, people have lived in River Heights for decades, been raised here, and stay here because of what River Heights has always been, full of character, charm, and space. And hopefully it will stay this way for my children. I hope you help us to retain River Heights' historic identity and character, and we strongly urge you to reject this rezoning and conditional use proposal. Thank you for your time and your patience.
Maybe there's questions. Any questions?
No.
No, that's okay. Ready. Arlene Hinsa?
Yes, I'm here.
She's coming.
You didn't call this guy that one up.
Was that?
I don't think you called him. No? He wasn't the fellow that was just up now.
Well, you took it.
You gave it to me.
I'll call him anyway.
Yeah, just call him next. Ouch.
I didn't trip. Good evening. My name is Arlene Hinsa, and I live at 170 Elm Street, which is the second house south of Academy on the east side. We're directly behind the vacant lot, what's called by the developer the parcel of land at 165 Montrose. We don't call it a parcel of land. We call it a side garden or a side yard because of the greenery. We've lived there since 1994, so I have significant experience with the back lane, specifically traffic, parking, and snow removal. It's these issues I want to address tonight, with the emphasis on safety. Number one, garages and the loss of green space. The proposed two side-by-side garages are not typical of the neighborhood, as the developer has stated they are. Homes in our area don't have large back gardens, but they do have a single or double garage with green space for a small garden or patio next to the garage. The garages at 165 eliminate all green space. They're simply a line of wall-to-wall structures with no greenery to relieve them. Greenery is important even in the back lanes. If you look down them in the warmer weather, there's lots of color. People plant flowers, they have grass, they have weeds, but weeds are green. The neighborhood laneways in River Heights are more than functional. They're also part of River Heights' charm. Number two, entrances to the garages. This is where safety comes into play. The entrances to the garages appear, and I say appear, to be at the very edge of the lane. There's no information on the drawings as to where the real property line is relative to the paved surface of the lane or to fixed points such as curbs and sidewalks. Without survey information for all the properties surrounding 165, it's impossible for us to know the dimensions. We do know that the rear eave of the garage roofs is only 20 inches inside the rear property line. In the side elevation drawing, the wall of the garage is about 4 inches in front of the eave, so the garage doors are approximately 2 feet inside the rear property line. Again, this is inconsistent with the neighborhood. Other garages in our laneway have an apron or a pad, which allows drivers to check for cars before slowly backing out. I have open space where I can see cars coming in both directions, and even 165's existing carport has enough space in order to give room for vehicles to maneuver. It would be difficult and unsafe to back directly into the lane without such access. Some cars use the laneway instead of the streets proper to get from A to B, and when they do so, they go at a fair clip. And as an aside, speed is probably going to be more of an issue because our back lane is scheduled to be resurfaced this summer, and so people are going to see a lovely paved surface, and we're going to be seeing more traffic and faster. It would be easy for vehicles traveling too fast to hit a car that has next to no visibility when backing out. The other advantage of the aprons is that it provides a space for the garbage and recycling bins. They're large and they need space around and between them. We wonder where the 8 additional ones can be located for 165. Sometimes Anterra doesn't put them back properly, or they get knocked over. If this happens at the corner of Academy, drivers turning into the laneway may not see the bins until it's too late. They'll need to brake suddenly in order to avoid hitting them, and no one wants to be braking suddenly on Academy Road with oncoming traffic. 8 additional bins in the summer is a stretch. Finding space for 8 extra bins amidst the snow in the winter is going to be an achievement. Number 3, other safety considerations. These include the fact that Academy Road is an extremely busy street, and cars don't always travel within the speed limit. There are also frequent pedestrians on the sidewalk, students from Calvin, people walking to the bus stops and to the shops. I was traveling westbound on Academy the other day, and I just tried an experiment. I turned left or south into the laneway, and I imagined a car in one of the new garages, especially the first one closest to Academy, backing out without seeing my car approaching. I'd need to brake very suddenly in order to avoid a collision. There's no question that the intended design would pose a serious risk for cars turning off Academy to collide with cars coming out of 165. Also, if the vehicle turning off Academy into the laneway had to brake suddenly to avoid a collision, it would be in danger of having another car either plow into it from the side or rear end it. As it stands now, the mouth of the laneway barely accommodates cars exiting and entering the laneway. The situation is, of course, exacerbated in the winter when the piles of snow start to grow. So we feel that a leeway into the side-by-side garages is an absolute must. The proposed fourplex could cause problems if it were in the middle of the laneway, but adjacent to Academy, it's an accident waiting to happen. The duplex property north of us, which is 164 and 166 Elm, is newly renovated and has a huge garage, double garage. Residents there have multiple vehicles, including 3 large trucks, a couple of which they park on their own back space. They're not encroaching anywhere else. They park on their own space. These trucks would restrict laneway access for people backing out of 165. And if any of the vehicles are parked there, which is often, there's no place for cars turning off Academy if they see someone backing it and they need to avoid a collision. There's nowhere for them to swerve or go. Number 4, pedestrians and others. Cars aren't our only consideration. The laneway is used by cyclists, pedestrians, and children. Their safety is already a concern, but will be jeopardized even more with the proposed plan because of poor driver visibility, backing out, as well as the increased number of cars and traffic. Number 5, parking. Based on the price and design of the units, as Glenn has already talked about, occupants are likely to be older professionals or seniors owning 2 cars. That's a potential for 6, maybe even 8 additional cars, which means the extra cars will need to park on either Montrose or on Elm and Waverly Streets. It's already hard for residents and their guests to find parking spaces on these streets some days. And what if these residents own another vehicle? A journeyman service person might have a company truck in addition to a personal vehicle. The occupants might have a cottage and own a trailer or an ATV or a snowmobile or boat. This isn't unreasonable. It's not an unreasonable assumption because many homes there already have several company trucks parked on the streets south of Academy. Several households also own trailers. It would take just 2 extra vehicles, such vehicles as these, to make parking a real inconvenience for the people on Montrose and also Waverly and Elm Street if there wasn't adequate parking on Montrose. And parking vehicles in the winter when plowing happens, streets have to be vacated, would be another hitch. Now, tonight we heard from the developer that he mentioned parking pads. That's the first time we've ever heard of them, but it would certainly add more concrete and vehicles to the back lane. And last point, it's not the least, winter and snow removal. We have one question. Where will the snow go that's plowed or shoveled behind 165's property? Plows create windrows that need to be shoveled. There's already no room. Both my neighbor to the north and I have no option but to put our snow in front of the fence along the side garden of 165. Richard Birchall, who's speaking next, put all the snow from his two-car parking pad in his backyard, and it generated a pile 5 feet high by 12 feet long by 8 feet high. So essentially, a two-car pad is going to require a volume equivalent for a full-size van. These are our valid concerns of the residents sharing the laneway between Montrose and Elm Street, south of Academy. We're really delighted that something's happening to that property. We really are. We're not opposed to that. But we just want to ensure that it's in keeping with the character of our neighborhood and that it won't jeopardize the safety of the residents every time we pull into the laneway or use it. Thank you very much for your time and the opportunity to hear our concerns. We appreciate it.
John Peterson? Don't want to speak?
No.
Cynthia McGregor? Cynthia McGregor? Keith Knowles?
I may have a question or comment.
What's he saying?
If I may, what they've done, they have a speaking order. If you allow them just to come up in their speaking order, and then they may not have any more else, other people presented.
Well.
So can we just let them come up and maybe call them who it is?
There's someone who wants to speak last, and so.
Yeah, they have already organized a speaking order. So why don't we just let that, or just let the initial people just come up.
David Rosen. David Rosen.
Not speaking.
Gail Osterman. Gail Osterman.
Oh, not speaking.
Not speaking. George Woods.
Not speaking. Supporting your opposition.
Laura Lazu and John Markham.
You want to speak, Laura?
You want to speak?
Yeah. Come on up. Yeah, come on down.
Here.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk. I just would like to address some of the comments that the developer made. One of them was the look of the building. It was presented as being consistent with the neighborhood, and that was a surprise. We really don't have fourplexes, and the look is very contemporary. I like the look, but not in our neighborhood. There is no yard to speak of at the back. That would be the green space is really enough for like a plant, a box for plants. When we moved to Winnipeg, we came from Vancouver and in 1999, and we looked everywhere at the time that we really could choose where to go. And we chose River Heights. We chose River Heights because of the single detached homes, their sizes, the trees. And now I'm looking at having pretty much an apartment block right on my corner. So really, I really don't like that idea. The parking space has been addressed, but I also noticed that the developer said that he had received comments that there was not enough parking, and therefore he thought that perhaps there would be room for two paths. Realistically speaking, I think it would be better to think of not four parking spots, but eight. And the developer himself doubted that it was possible to add two paths. That means that we are looking at maybe four more cars parking on our street. And it is already difficult sometimes to find parking in front of our own house. So as far as the planning goes, I think it's weak at least. The developer also said that there are precedents for a fourplex because we have duplexes in the neighborhood. One thing is not the same as the other. There are duplexes, but there are not duplexes. And there are not duplexes with those stairs going out to four different front doors. That look is radically different from anything that we have on our street or nearby. There is nothing comparable. I don't want that look in my street. So if we allow a fourplex, what we are actually accepting is that some of the developer in the future is going to say, look, we have a fourplex, so we can build an apartment building. So that precedent had to stop now. The developer also said a number of times, we could have done better, bigger, earn more money. And I felt that there was a sense of concession towards us. We've done our civil job here, and I resent that thought. This is my street, this is our neighborhood, this is where we chose to live and raise our child a number of years ago. So somebody else that does not belong to our neighborhood wants to build something there for the purpose of the business, which I find nothing wrong with that business. I just find it inappropriate to develop that idea in our neighborhood. So I don't accept that argument at all. Thank you.
Gina Scaramouche.
I just have two questions.
What? Go ahead.
So just a couple of questions for the developer. First of all, he quoted a double lot being a 70-foot wide lot, and I would like to know where that definition comes from. I live at 187 Montrose, four houses down from 165 Montrose. My lot is 75 feet wide. It's a single-family home. I don't feel that it's out of character. My next-door neighbor's lot, also 75 feet wide, single-family home. So where that definition came from? Sorry.
The person who speaks towards
The other question I have is this double garages. How do you propose sharing a garage for your owners of your condo? So you're going to say you guys can only park on one side of the garage, but you don't own the garage? So I definitely think that parking will be an issue. I have a driveway. Both my neighbors have driveways. It's already limited as to the parking that is available. And I guess it's not normal for this street to have a fourplex. It's not normal anywhere in the neighborhood. And this idea that there's a need for these condos, I think Block 10, which is the development that is on Grant and Niagara and Waterloo. It's sort of, I believe, an eight-unit complex. It's called Block 10, probably 10 units then. It was built a couple years ago. Neighbors opposed it. All we've seen is for sale signs and for rent signs for the last 3 years. It's very difficult to get people to integrate into the neighborhood when there's constant turnover. It's not people setting down roots who have been in the neighborhood for 15, 30, 50 years, which is typical for River Heights. And, you know, those duplexes do end. I mean, it's not something we see everywhere. And I don't think that a business's proposal for units should have a negative impact on the lifestyle and of the residents who already live there, who've made the commitment, have purchased their homes. We purchased homes not expecting to live beside a fourplex. So to all of a sudden, kind of, this is a game changer, and it has an impact on myself and all of our other neighbors. And I don't think that, I hope that you will see that and that you will understand why this is not a good fit for that piece of property. Thank you.
Mark McGregor. Teresa S. Spears.
That would be me. I came in opposition to the request.
Okay. What's she saying?
In opposition. She's not here for opposition, so.
Richard Burchill.
See if I can make this quick so we can all enjoy the rest of the evening. Good evening, Council, members of the gallery. My name is Richard Burchill. My family and I live and own the property at 155 Montrose, right across the academy from the development. I'd like to thank all in attendance for their patience and their interest and all the various opinions that have been expressed this evening. I'd like to reiterate that what has been said previously by many of the other speakers, that we're not against the development of this property, that we think that increasing the density slightly is not out of character with the community, but that the scope of the increase is the thing that we have problems with. And also with the variances and like I said, the conditional use. I understand that the developer's in here to make money, and I appreciate that we have people in our community that are willing to put forward the effort and the monies to bring properties back into the market, and that the developer deserves to earn a decent return commensurate with his risk. But that risk should not outweigh the risk that all the rest of us have taken as developers and investors ourselves when we bought into the properties, and the number of people that have invested heavily either in land drainage or facade replacement or complete renovation. So what I find concerning here is the scale and the manner of the development, and what I'd like to direct my concerns to is the impacts of the variances and the context of the proposed housing development is going to have on myself and my neighbors. To quote the City of Winnipeg Zoning Bylaw Review and the Winnipeg Zoning Bylaw, variances to standards in the bylaw will only be given if the applicant can show that the bylaw creates an injurious effect on their property. Variances should be the exception rather than the norm for development. Further, for the purpose of this determination, injurious effects includes physical characteristics of the owner's site that make it difficult or impossible to comply with the provisions of this bylaw, but does not include conditions created by the owner or conditions generally shared by other properties in the neighborhood. I don't think there's anything exceptional about the property or any of the encumbrances that it may have in terms of setbacks, in terms of treescapes, in terms of, you know, the number of the access to the back. So, like, I don't think there's anything exceptional there. Therefore, I feel it should not be necessary to use measures such as variances intended for the development of new housing on undersized lots. We shouldn't need to leverage those kind of things to get some more density on this lot. Variances to essentially eliminate the side yards to the south and the north appear to be driven by the desire to create four multi-level split dwellings in two detached buildings. If the project was rescaled to a single building with two dwellings and a common center wall, much of the current design might be retained, as well as the side yards. The impact of removing these side yards is not only to the house to the south, where essentially all the trees will go. I can't imagine you're going to be able to dig a foundation that close to those trees and not lose all of them, besides the backfill and everything that might be required for drainage. On the other side, on the side yard closest to Academy, the setback means that there will be no significant features to that wall. The house across, mine, has distinct facades. It's got a facade that faces Academy and a facade that faces Montrose. I see no reason why, with some forethought and some design, you couldn't create a building that had two facades. If you needed to put in a duplex, because that is the metric by which you're going to make money on this, and we all agree somebody's got to make some money out of this or it's not going to happen, that if you put some effort into it, essentially creating two feature walls on a house is not out of character. There are many houses along Academy that have entrances right off Academy on a long wall that faces Academy with many feature windows and architectural details. So for me, I don't think that there is necessarily an injurious effect that needs to be compensated by these variances. And I don't see that there is anything that was unforeseen. You know, this project was entered into with open eyes, was as a complete speculation, and so all of the encumbrances and everything on the properties were known beforehand. It's not like you dug a hole and found out, well, look at that. The geology is all messed up here. I have to move the whole property over so it doesn't fall down. I can see that. That's not what we have here. The next thing I'd like to work on is the context, and this is what we call the character. We're told that this development is in context. The context is a mature neighborhood with many trees that was developed between 1900 and 1950, like many of those neighborhoods, the West End, Wolseley, River Heights, Scotia, they're all very similar. But they're all unique. They all had different architectural influences. They all had different indigenous builders add their own little tweak to everything so that everyone ends up with a unique property that they can say is theirs. It doesn't look like their neighbors, but it still has features that harmonize with everything that they've got on their house. The other part of the context is the urban forest. We work really hard at keeping all those trees. We moved from the West End, from Woolsey, and every year we're all out there banding the trees and to make sure that they're going to be there for our kids. I understand that we're going to lose that battle on a few trees on every block, and that some are going to blow down with age and some are going to rot. But to take out more trees to because we want a variance to make the building bigger, I think is a little short-sighted. The next thing about the context, and unfortunately, I don't have my big screen projector here, but I'd like to contrast, and I'll hand these out, four housing projects. One is the big black box that everybody knows, and another one that is going on Kingsway and Waterloo. Two very large developments. One, highly contextual to the neighborhood. Lots of different roof lines, lots of eyebrows, two facades on a corner lot. The other one, lots of stucco, and maybe in keeping with, you know, something that would be going on Henderson Highway or maybe a development in Headingley, but certainly not very similar to what's going on here, right? And when I say Henderson Highway, I mean outside the city. The other one is a small house on, where is it now, 395 Waterloo. So modest house, completely redone, and taking care to put in small details, not over-dramatized because there wasn't the money, but all the doors and windows have cornices. The massing and the roof line are in keeping with what was originally there. And the tree that was in front of the house is still there. It hasn't been taken down. North of that, two blocks, is a very modern wedge or shed-roofed, all-glass frontage building, which is even pushing the envelope compared to what we're being looked at here today. So what I'd like to see is that the variances don't go ahead, that we refactor what is going to be put on there to a duplex. I think that is reasonable. It's not out of character with everything else. And that we get some character put back in. I'm not saying that they have to make an arts and crafts bungalow out of this. What I am saying, though, is I'd like to see, when I look out my window, which they all look across the street, I want to see that something that's commensurate with the environment that I'm creating on my side. Just to wrap up, I'd like to just make this quick. Item 9, in response to 1-2, that the property be only a duplex and two dwellings. In response to the statement, the principal reason for the rear yard setback is to allow privacy and sunlight penetration at the rear of the property. If you have 15-foot peak on two double-car garages and you only have a 5-foot rear yard, to say that you've got a 28-foot rear yard that allows light penetration is stretching it. In response to the subject building being masked to fit the area, if the context that we're trying to achieve here is two detached dwellings on 235 lots, then contextually 29 feet would be the width, not 32. In response to C, this assumes that if there's going to be mixed tenure, it's short occupancy or rental. You are not going to get that sort of short tenure if this project has to support $400,000 or $350,000 condos. In response to A, item number 10, conditional use, we don't feel that it's suitable for downsized residents or small families, and that the demographics of the default occupants are not likely to take advantage of the existing community infrastructure that has been set aside for families, such as schools and recreation centers. In response to B, it does create a substantial adverse effect on the amenities, use, safety, and convenience of the adjoining properties in the adjacent area, the loss of trees, the traffic and parking, snow clearing, concerns over setting off a gold rush of fourplexes on corner lots, and the possible impact to adjacent properties. In response to item D, the development as proposed is not compatible with the area in which the property to be affected is situated. It consumes too much of the lot. There's no real attempt made to incorporate architectural details and materials to homogenize or harmonize with the neighborhood. The amount of glass in the facade is not consistent with the surrounding architecture. And controls and acceptance over final design are too vague. Trust us, it'll look better when we put these stairs on or this. It'll be good. You'll like it. In response to item 11, the variance, item A, the use of four dwellings as proposed is not consistent with our Winnipeg's intent for the River Heights, North River Heights. It has lots and sizes that are adequate and in a good shape to accommodate the general standards of this bylaw without using variance necessary on smaller lots for newer buildings. In response to B, it does create a substantial adverse effect on the amenities, use, safety, and convenience of the adjoining property and adjacent areas. It removes several mature trees on the south property that are not susceptible to disease or pest, and it encroaches excessively on former breathing space to the south. In response to C, it is not the minimum modification of a zoning bylaw required to relieve the injurious effect the zoning bylaw has on the applicant's property. All the zoning, I won't belabor that point. And finally, in response to item D, the development as proposed is not compatible with the area in which the property is to be, the property to be affected is situated. The setbacks excessively deviate from the norm, the footprint excessively deviates from the norm, and the backyard and green space excessively deviates from the norm. The other thing is that it may produce intimate contact between neighbors and buildings to the south that was never really planned for by the neighbor to the south. Thank you very much. I hope I didn't keep anybody waiting. And I'll just...
These are the pictures.
Is there anyone else in opposition? Oh.
Richard, can I come back?
Go ahead, sir.
Richard, back. Oh, come on back. Sorry, my friend. I just had to ask you a few questions.
Thanks. I'm not going to ask everybody the same question, so I was waiting until someone came with something like this. So just for my clarification, I was getting quite a few phone calls, and I wasn't able to speak to them because it was a public hearing. But through the River Heights grapevine, was there a community meeting that in the living room or somewhere where you all got together and kind of?
Yes, there was.
There was. And is that kind of consensus in here a bit?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay. Okay. That's that. So this is kind of not everybody in agreement for everything. Good luck
True.
On that. But there's a general feeling from that group that met, that took their time other day to go meet about this issue and. We all kind of came together and talked about this thing. So what I'm hearing from you when I read this quickly, besides all some other points you made, it's really that conditional use and that variance are the real big ones.
I think so, because that is the thing that leads into all the rest, right?
Yeah.
If the variance is, like if you said, no, you have to put 7 feet on Academy, and you have to put 4 feet on the south side, and you have to use section 139, to produce your frontage, so now you're at 40 feet or 35. So then we're talking about a very different building, right?
We're talking one building.
We're talking one building.
And a duplex only.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm not with you yet on agreeing to that idea of the R2 yet. Mm-hmm. That one I'm still having, I'm not there. So it's nice to see that you're coming around to the group there, but I'm worried about, I'd like to see the whole package before we do any kind of rezoning for today. But I understand, it is interesting to hear you guys say, I wasn't expecting to hear that today at all. So that's why I'm glad we have these community meetings.
Well, what we were also looking forward to is we were looking forward to two handbooks that our Winnipeg is supposed to produce. One, they're supposed to produce a neighborhood handbook for the neighborhood to get together, and that was part of a larger document I could absolutely not create on my own.
No worries.
But we were looking for some guidance on that. And we were also looking for a conservative approach that would say, listen, let's not push the envelope for the next 120 days. Let's see if we can get, you know, some guidelines and some input into some sort of draft document that says this is the kind of approach and the kind of thing that we'd like to see. And I would think that if you were going to risk money or you were going to take on a project, you'd much rather see that and say, okay, it's not quite a coloring book, you know, but it does have lines, and as long as I stay in there and as long as it's not, you know, pink with purple polka dots, people will probably be happy with it and I can get my project, you know, through the city faster.
Yeah.
And so that was one thing I was hoping to get out of this, was to say, I'd like to see that handbook. I'd like to see the handbook on the low-density housing in mature neighborhoods. I'd like to see that soon.
So would I.
And if somebody needs a hand lighting a fire under somebody,
I can talk about that. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's my question.
Okay.
Thanks.
Hello, my name is Keith Knowles. I'm a resident of Montrose 174. I'm also a retired forest health biologist who had worked with insect and disease for about 35 years. Dutch elm disease was one of the major ones I worked with, so I would like to focus on the loss of the trees on that property, which Richard alluded to. There's a number of trees on the property, of which I'd say four are mature, fairly stately trees, two maple and two basswood. Those trees are not susceptible to Dutch elm disease, so they're not going to be lost in the near future. However, River Heights, the law, if those four trees were lost in the development, well, that doesn't sound like a big deal, but River Heights is a real hot spot for Dutch elm disease, and I think that will continue. There, a lot of the older blocks on the street have mature trees with a lot of dead limbs. Those dead limbs are breeding grounds for the elm bark beetle, which spreads the disease. So this trend will continue. In the area immediately around 165 Montrose, that would include the two blocks on Elm and Montrose that extend from Wellington Crescent to Kingsway. In the last 5 years, we have lost 60 elm trees to the disease. And if this trend continues, I can see us losing more. So to be able to save these trees on the property, I think, is important. And by building a duplex as opposed to a fourplex, I think those trees can be saved. Thank you.
Concerns that they raised?
Unless, is there anyone for information that hasn't been called? No.
Yeah, then the
You can.
Was someone for information?
No, she hasn't spoken.
She hasn't spoken.
If you want to speak, you just have to come down.
Okay. Sit down.
Yeah.
I wanted to say is that we're a little jealous of Calgary because they have this low-density residential housing guideline for established communities, and they've had it since 1993. And it does, like, if we were going to use it to apply to what we're talking about now, it has all the details in here. So we want something like this, too. Thank you.
Any questions? So, well, this is kind of a funny, not, just so the audience says no. You are aware, you probably aren't, that we actually have approved that, the mature infill guidelines. That process has actually been approved already. The planning department is reported back recently on their status on it. There's some funding issues, but there will be some community consultation started on this particular matter within probably a month time.
Yeah, it would really help a lot. Like, as we went around and looked at different infill, some infill is really compatible and other just isn't. And then there's the OOPS projects that they go up and then everybody's going, how did that get there? So yeah. If we had something like this.
It's contextualized the lots rather than a standardized zoning for every lot. These are great because what about a corner lot and how it's positioned? So, yeah, so we're really hoping, and there's also Edmonton has another nice one, and Toronto has a good one as well.
So we have the template.
Yeah, right. We'll have four templates to start working on.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it for opposition? No other opposition?
You said that three or four times already.
It's a process.
Answer any of the concerns, but do not bring out anything new.
Pardon me?
Do not bring up anything new, just
do not bring up anything new.
Any of the concerns?
I won't. No, I won't. I'll try and speak to all. Thanks for everyone's comments, by the way. I think I'm just going to cut it and just talk about some of the variances and what we are actually applying for and the process that we went through to come to this design. So we aren't varying any of the side yards except for Academy. So there's nothing stopping from anyone building a single-family house exactly where we have it on the south boundary, the distance off of that south property line. We're not varying that. It's within city guidelines. We're not varying the front yard or the backyard. Those are all in compliance with what the city has recommended for those areas. And we are very cognizant of that going in. We knew that there was going to be some resistance, certainly with respect to that monstrosity that's gone up on your street. Montrose has a reputation of being very galvanized when it comes to their position on developing, and I think that that probably has a lot to do with it, and some of that was voiced here tonight. So I don't want the discussion to hinge on the fact that we're applying for all these variances that's pushing the envelope on that property. Yeah, we are densifying that property, but at the same time, we are being very conscious of the size, of the look. Okay, you know, let's just talk about the size for a second. I know there's some issues with the way we have it designed architecturally, but, you know, keeping the heights low, keeping the setback, the front yard back, you know, yes, I guess there's, if you read the guidelines there, you could interpret it to be a 40-foot setback. I think that that's unreasonable. I think 30 feet, people are not going to go, oh, my God, I wish that was 10 feet further back. I think 30 feet is going to look just fine on that street. It's not going to stand out at all. It's going to be back, like I said, 8 feet from where the property is right now. You know, in terms of the backyard that we're creating there, we have 15 feet, not 5 feet. There's a sizable, and that's after we've moved our house back to comply with the 30-foot setback on the front. We are creating an actual space that people can use. It's not just offering lip service to that. In terms of the demographic that's going to move there, you know, call us lousy marketers, but I don't actually know who's going to move in there. I haven't given that a ton of thought. We did design it in such a way it's a split level, so it's accessible. Elderly people, retired people could easily move around in that. In fact, one of our most ardent supporters is an 85-year-old couple living in a 2.5-story house on Montrose, and they have no intention of moving. They can navigate that house just fine. But anyway, that's an aside, and not everyone is lucky enough to be able to do that at 85. But, you know, the way we've designed it, too, I think it's flexible enough that we can create enough bedrooms in that place that it's very conceivable that a family would move into that property. And I think that looking down the street, I happen to know people on Montrose. Some of them own one car. Not everyone owns two cars. You know, if you've got stuff that you're going to be parking there for your lake, you've got an ATV, you've got a boat, I don't see a lot of that. You know, sometimes people manage to stick it into their backyard. Clearly, that you can't do that on these properties. You're going to have to go rent a space for $50 a month somewhere to park your ATV. In terms of it being a double lot, certainly I was taking some liberty in calling it a double lot. Right now, it's a single lot. There's some single lots out there that have a 600-foot frontage, and, you know, you could put four properties on that, five properties, and that's still a single lot. Conversely, we have properties in the Fort Rouge area that have been divided up into small properties, you know, 25-foot wide, where they're doing multifamily and stacking up, you know, three units high in some areas. That said, when we look at that, I do feel that this is a modest use of that space. We could be going higher. We could have been pushing for one envelope on there. Yes, one duplex would be an even, you know, considerable step back from that in terms of density. I think that's an underutilization of that. I think that you're not going to even notice the fact that there's four families, that there's four groups of people living on that corner. You know, the design, I feel really good about that design. We work very hard to comply with the guidelines that were set out. We did not want to vary the front yard. That was germane to that, that right off the offset, just given what had happened further up the street on Montrose. In terms of the architecture, you know, I think that we could debate that a lot, and certainly the, some of the people that we've talked to that were supporters and other people that were ambivalent, they had no issues with the architecture itself, and it just comes down to a matter of taste. I think that some of the things that we have there are certainly are nods to the area. We didn't want to build a big flat roof monstrosity there, something that should, that would maybe be more appropriate on waterfront, or, and you see some of these infills go in with, when it's a single family, when there's no, when there's no opportunity to have this discussion where you can actually talk about that design. It's, you know, you, if you fall within the city guidelines, you can just kind of build your single family house whoever you want to. We've tried to have some representations of what is in that area. Granted, there are aspects of this design that are clearly modern, and John and I like modern architecture, and we felt that we wanted to kind of weave a little bit of that in. Yes, it will have an impact on your neighborhood, but it's a new build. People use spaces differently. They use their homes differently than they did back in the era that the homes a lot of you owned. Largely, you know, you get the same people living there. You get people that love River Heights. They're going to enjoy the neighborhood. It's not like they're just going to be utilizing this place as a place to crash and party for a while and then move on. I think that they're going to be an integral part of your neighborhood, and there's no reason to believe, not believe, rather, that they would be welcome neighbors at some point. So anyway, I've covered off some of the points that got brought up. There's some safety issues and that were brought up. It's hard to know how to speak to that. Like currently, and I guess it's a function of it being a corner lot on a busy intersection, and the city cities in general like to increase the density there, and I guess that it automatically follows that you're going to have those kinds of issues in terms of traffic communicating in and out of that space. So clearly those things need to be addressed, and I know that's even been brought up with some of our supporters, and they've said you're going to have to rethink how you do the parking, and granted, that's probably true. I think that, you know, when we did our site plan, it just made sense to just kind of pop these things down there, and that's not to say that we can't massage the distances a little bit, and just, again, we're inside of our tolerances, and even the way our carport is situated right now at 165 Academy, we're pushing the envelope on the distance to Academy, so already we're inside the allowable distance. It's, that house is too close to Academy by city guidelines, and also, you know, we have limited visibility coming out of that parkade or coming out of that carport. So these conditions already exist. I think it's going to be a huge improvement what we're doing there. I don't know what else to say at this point.
Yeah, questions. These are just in case questions, I guess I'll call them. The point was brought up regarding snow removal. I don't see how you can put any snow anywhere. There's not really any room left. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, we have a management company that's going to be taking care of all the yard servicing and all the snow removal, so I think we've resigned ourselves to the fact that a lot of that snow is going to have to be hauled off-site. Certainly it's going to depend on what kind of snowfall we have every year, but yeah, we can't just pile it in the back lane, obviously, and if we have hardscaping and we need to have people using their space, it's going to be a cost that will be borne by the condo owner in terms of management.
Second question, you know, four units, two bins per unit, how are you going to put all these recyclable containers and waste containers, where are those going to go?
Oh, we have space allocated for that.
You have already allocated?
Yeah, we have our fence, the way it's designed, this fence is pushed back, and we're going to have our garbage bins adjacent to the garages.
Even though it's supposed to be behind the fence by our bylaw. Okay.
Correction, behind the fence.
Yeah, behind the fence. Okay. Let me quickly just go through my notes here for you. I have a fair number of questions for the administration. The front yard that you're proposing, the 30-foot setback, correct me if I'm right, about 15 feet into it, you have a sidewalk that goes through the middle of it. Is that correct? So you have a sidewalk that runs, you don't really have a front yard. You have a piece of strip of a piece of yard and then a front side, another sidewalk. So you almost have two sidewalks. Is that correct?
Well, the front yard, as I'm defining it, has no bearing on what is on the surface of that, our building
unless
starts.
You're trying to play on it. Or if you're trying to play on it, yeah, it does have a bearing on surface what's on there. So,
well, if you're playing with chalk and skipping, I guess you can do it on
right.
the sidewalk.
Sure, but again, the idea, but again, it's not, it's quite unique. Would you agree that your front yard would be very unique compared to all the other front yards in the
neighborhood? That whole corner is going to be very unique.
Right, and
absolutely.
Uncharacteristic of the neighborhood, perhaps.
Well, when you look at infills, and there's very few examples of infills that are not unique. Ours is going to be unique. Yes, there's going to be more sidewalks. You're going to have people communicating between those buildings. Do properties in River Heights right now have a hardscape courtyard in between? Mine does in that area, but most people don't. There's a lot of aspects of this design that are going to be unique, and I think that I'm asking people to be open-minded about it. I don't think that they're going to have necessarily a negative impact on that area. I mean, people have renovated houses. There's a couple of examples of uniqueness on that street that I would say are poor examples of design and implementation of a change of use. And just right up the street on the other side of Montrose, someone has built a massive stucco addition onto the front of their house that's protruding forward of the adjacent properties, and it's, you know, who knows when that happened. It looked like it's probably about 20 years old at this time, but yeah, that, how did that get approved? I mean, that's not a good use. It doesn't look good. It's you know, neighbors complain about it, and the ones that I talk to. And
can I just speak to that? When we looked at the four units themselves, you know, initially you just think, okay, let's do a sidewalk to each one of the stairs.
Right.
So what we decided was to not make four distinct entry points to all four of them, but rather do it in a way that was the one entry point, or I think it's the one entry point. That way we could create a layer of landscaping, and then the sidewalk going to the units would be horizontal to the units,
yeah,
and then go to the units themselves. So it would create the first layer of landscaping, sidewalk that would be recessed, and then a second layer towards the, or adjacent to the units.
Yeah.
So we played with the first, you know, that way, and we thought this was a little bit more design oriented,
right,
complementary.
It's compatible to
so
your
that's
design.
So that's how we,
yeah,
approach
based
that.
Based upon your design. Yeah. Better than having this a whole block of four sidewalks. Okay, I just have a few questions for the administration next. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Administration? What is the parking requirement for, I don't see a variance in here. They're looking for a fourplex with four parking spots. Is that correct? I thought it was 1.5 or 1.25 per unit.
It would be 1.5 per unit.
So why is a variance? Why am I not seeing a variance in this?
That is a very good question. I don't have an answer to that.
Okay, because it's a huge issue. Not good. Okay. The other question I have is when I looked at the garages. What is the minimum setback that they have? Is it 5 feet or 4 feet?
It's 2 feet for a detached garage.
For a detached garage, it's 2 feet off the back lane.
That's correct.
That's right. Okay. So that's why the days of past, it wasn't so, but now our new bylaws have it as 2 feet.
That's correct.
And I think that's what it is. And there's no concern about the fact that it's right on a busy intersection corner? It's on the corner lot? And it's only 2 feet away. There's no concern from the administration on that. Like they're going to be pulling right out into the intersection.
Well, it would be the same for a single family home. It would just be 2 feet off the property line for a detached garage,
right?
And then four feet off of Academy. So they are showing 3.7 feet for the garage right on the corner, which is within a tolerance. So you would
that's
be
off Academy.
Off of Academy.
So the house has zero. But the garage can be pushed over 4 feet.
Yeah, right here on Academy, under the bylaw, a detached garage could be 2 feet off of the Academy property line and 2 feet off the back lane. They're showing 3.7 feet from Academy and then
and the two there.
Feet off the lane.
So it complies with our bylaw, the placement of it.
Okay.
Okay, John?
Let me just quickly go through. Separation in the front yard. Condo. Yeah, brutal. They're going to be freaking good, sir. Okay. I have enough to make my decision at this point. Okay, the rezoning. We do them all three together or separate, right?
Yeah, just separately, yeah.
Okay. Okay, the the report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read.
All those in favor, opposed, carried.
That receipt of public reputation be concluded.
All those in favor, opposed, carried.